Checkpoint Intimates.
Yes, and welcome to another episode of Checkpoint Intimates, your weekly gaming podcast where two members of the Checkpoint team go one-on-one and get intimate on a particular gaming topic. My name is Elliot, as always, and I'm joined by Colby.
Hey, Elliot, what are we talking about today?
You know exactly what we're talking about,
and what
Colby.
Might that be?
We're talking about the concept of abandonware. So for those who don't know, abandonware is like a type of digital product, a video game in this instance, that has kind of been lost to time. They are no longer supported by any official streams, not by the developer, not by the publisher, not by whoever owns the IP, but they may be supported by external sources like archivists who are keeping them alive. So this is the kind of topic we want to tackle today. Colby, you are the Checkpoint historian. So you're the perfect person to bring in to talk about these kind of games that have been lost to time.
Somewhat. I mean, the question is, is abandonware just a fancy name for a ROM that you're unlikely to get sued over, right? Because they're effectively the same thing, because unless you're actually going to buy like a DOS computer, right, download the abandonware, put it on a disk and use it, you're going to emulate on your computer like you'd emulate a console.
So you're right, Colby. Abandonware, typically in the form that it actually takes in society, is that these abandoned games that are no longer being supported, they are given new life on a new console. So whether that's a PC or whether that's a mobile phone or something like that, that's where these games are now thriving, not on the console they were intended to be developed for a lot of the time. Some of these games are old school PC games that are still, you know, being updated or whatever, or being kept alive.
Yeah, like abandonware tends to be primarily PC games, you know, or old computer games that used to probably run on operating systems that are no longer supported. We're talking like DOS-based games, you know, Windows 95-based games, like those sorts of things where, I mean, in some cases, the original developer or copyright owner still exists. So, for example, you might find a Microsoft game on there from the 90s. But interestingly, like for a company that's as interested in litigation as Microsoft is, and has been in the past as well, they don't seem to really take any notice. And in some cases, you know, there can be confusion on who actually owns the copyright.
Yeah, like, where does that confusion even come about? Like, you'd think it would be quite a cut and dry thing, but I guess back in the day, it wasn't made as obvious who the official copyright holder would be in these kind of agreements between two parties.
Because I guess it's a little bit different when we talk about consoles, because like Nintendo, Sega, Microsoft, you know, they're licensing and publishing games on their consoles, so they sort of buy the rights. So, as we can see, you know, via like Nintendo's recent lawsuit, it's like they effectively own the rights to everything that they release on their console, whether they made it or not. Whereas you got to remember with like PCs, like back in the day, it's just like bedroom coders, like small groups of people with their own company, the Sierras and the like Delpine. Remember those sorts of companies that back in the day that probably don't exist, or the owners, just being the nature of the industry they were in at the time, aren't so much interested in the financial aspect of it. Because it's like, I mean, who's going to want to pay money for a point and click or a text RPG?
Yeah, these text adventure games, you know what I mean? From like 30 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, they're effectively valueless anyway. But, you know, and we're talking about like the historical sort of point of view where it's almost like a museum. And I think that, you know, it's definitely a positive that, you know, even if the copyright owners are still around or if someone does own it, that they just sort of let it be. So if you wanted to, you can go and play some, you know, classic influential video games.
I totally agree. And you're right. The term museum is an awesome way to describe some of this abandonware, because those games may not be what is flying off the shelf right now, but for those who want to take a trip down memory lane and say, hey, this is actually where this whole genre started, or this is where things really kicked off, like, those games are awesome, and they should be kind of remembered or like kept intact as a kind of a historical significant kind of perspective. Like, there should be museums for video games, and that's basically what these people who keep abandonware alive, that's what they're doing, right?
Yeah, and it's sort of like, you know, and you know, it's sort of like, you know how like Disney have their famous vault where every few years they'll take certain DVDs off the shelves and put them in the vault so yes. no one can buy them.
Yes.
And, you know, it's like, you know, people should be able to experience these things because at the end of the day, it's like people made these, you know, they're, you know, pieces of art in themselves. And if, you know, you can't just, well, you can obviously just lock them away and it's like, well, we have all this stuff, but no one will ever see it. No one will ever be able to play it, you know, and it just sounds wrong to try and take things like that, that really aren't doing anyone any harm financially and, you know, and just being like, well, no one can play my games and no one can watch my movies.
Yeah. Well, what you're talking about potentially here is the recent news that Nintendo is suing ROM distribution sites, which means that all these games, including Abandonware, that have been lost to time, these are being removed from these sites because Nintendo, as the like rightful property owners, can do this. And they can say, no, remove this game. We don't want you to have that. But you're right. There's this really sad element of that, right? Because if Nintendo chooses not to do anything with those properties, then all of a sudden, all that Abandonware, all that those like video game museums that were being kept alive by these archivists, they're all just disappearing. And all of a sudden, all of these like these games that were so influential are just disappearing altogether. And there's not going to be any way to access them anymore unless you happen to have an original copy on the original console slash PC it was designed for.
Yeah, it's almost like deleting history, you know what I mean?
And yeah, it really
because
is.
If no one can access it or see it, it's almost like it never existed. And one of the fantastic things about the internet is that, you know, it's the same with music and all sorts of things. It's like you've basically got all of time is available to you constantly.
True.
Right?
But I guess where video games exist in this weird medium is that unlike a song, like, a song from 50 years ago or 100 years ago can still be played today, whereas a video game from 30 years ago, like, it can't because we don't have the operating system that runs it anymore. Like, technology has advanced so far that it's been left obsolete and unplayable, which means that, yeah, unlike these other mediums that continue to have these archives of things, video games really doesn't have that. The only way to have that archive, that museum, is for these, I guess, like, vigilantes to keep them alive, because that's really what these archivists are, right? They're doing something against the will of the property owner, but they're doing it for the good of the consumer, in a way.
It's such a bizarre thing, because in a lot of these cases, it is pretty much copyright infringement, right?
Yeah, it is.
And, I mean, they're not selling it for money, but it is effectively...
No, but some of these ROM distribution websites do benefit off, like, advertisements and stuff. So, in a way, they're selling it for money, even if it's not a physical, like, actual transaction.
But, you know, at the same time, like, I'm sure they have to pay for servers and those sorts of things. So, you know...
They're not making bank, that is for sure.
They might not be gazillionaires.
I highly doubt it somehow. So, what is your perspective on this, then? I take it you're in my court where we're like, these archivists, they need to continue to be preserving and not being having their projects taken down, because we do need these.
I'd classify them as archivists as well, and I agree with you 100%. I don't see why it really matters if something that's 30 years old that has no real value anyway, then, you know, you're not selling. It's not like someone downloading a text-based RPG from the 80s is going to affect anybody's profit or income.
Do these games have no value? I mean, like a dollar. I was about to say, we're using that word literally here because you can't actually purchase this game. Like, it's not supported to be purchased in its current form. So, therefore, it has no value because there's no way to buy it. Therefore, there's no actual money being...
No, but and, you know, and these aren't games that are worth thousands of dollars on eBay either, you know what I mean? Like, this is, like, the good, the bad, and the ugly of, like, a generation.
So true, because often when you think about old school games, like, it's the good ones that pop to mind. They're the ones that people remember, and the kind of the crappy ones or the ones that really had no innovation or no inspiration or just were downright quite bad or mediocre even, they get lost. People forget they exist. And that's a problem because we can learn stuff from those games. And even just pretending like they didn't exist or moving past the point of remembering it, that's sad. That's like losing a bit of our past.
And there are games that are ahead of their time as well that, you know, may not have sold well, that get lost in time as well. So it's like, you know, in these archives, you know, you've got the origins of a lot of the video game series that are popular now,
right?
A lot of the genres that are popular now.
Yeah, imagine, like, going back and going, oh my God, that's where that came from. Like, that mechanic or that idea from video games that is so prevalent now, like, that's where it came from. That's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, you've got the new James Bond film, but you've also got, like, Goldfinger from the 60s.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and we're never going to lose Goldfinger to time, so why is it okay for us to lose video games to time? It's just such an odd place for us to be in, and yet here we are. So I guess my real question, moving forward from this, is what happens in, like, 20 years from now? Like, if these games are already... And game as a medium isn't that old. It really isn't at all. What, like, the oldest game is 30 to 40 years old?
I mean, people did, like, little things probably in the 70s, but video games as we know it really are from the 80s onwards. Like,
sure.
Anything that would resemble a modern video game was around about then. You know, and I would hope that developers don't start taking down websites like this. So far, Abandonware has been pretty much been left to the side. Like we were sort of saying, you know, the difference between that and a ROM is negligible.
Sure.
But it seems that the PC side of things, probably just because a lot of the publishers did it themselves rather than licensing them and those sorts of things. You know, but I hope that we don't see a trend of big media companies that have bought all of these rights attacking what are essentially archives.
Yeah, it's true. And, like, back to my point, if video games have only been around since the 80s and we're already losing games to time and falling off and disappearing, like, what happens in the future from now? If we can't keep a historical archive of just 40 years of the past, like, we're doomed for the future.
Well, and, you know, like, on that note, because, you know, we're really only talking about the 90s to the early 2000s, because modern video game consoles are extremely hard to emulate, so it's hard to find anything modern.
Especially when they put in measures deliberately to try to stop emulation from happening.
Yeah.
And then it's like,
so we're not talking about
games
that that came out last year that we're trying to claim as abandoned. We're talking about things that are long gone.
Yeah. But what happens to, like, let's say Microsoft or Sony collapses and all of a sudden their games are no longer supported and there's all these IPs that just get lost and we can't even emulate their current systems. Like, 30 years from now, what if nobody can play any of the Uncharted games because that IP is just
lost?
That
is a world I just don't want to live in.
It seems pretty sad. So I guess we're on the same page here, and I'd really struggle to imagine anybody not being on that page. Like, it's important that we keep these historical archives of games just as a measure of
the
where
history
we come from.
Of the industry we love.
Yeah, I mean, we do love it, and therefore it's important to continue to remember the past and to not lose that, because if we lose it, we can't revisit it ever.
No, once it's gone, it's gone.
And it feels like this is the turning point. Like, either we archive it now, or these companies continue to shut down these archives and we lose it forever, and that's the real problem.
And so, I hope that does not happen.
I really hope it doesn't happen either. Colby, thank you for joining me and talking all about Abandonware and archivists, even if it's a bit of a sad topic. Join us next week for more Checkpoint Intimates.